It was the town of 5,000 souls' first newspaper, and its list of original subscribers blended aristocrat and journeyman in a true reflection of the democratic spirit about to surface in the restless British colony.
James Edwards, breeches maker.
Jacob Myers, saddler.
Charles Carroll, barrister at law.
Absalom Bonham.
Most were just ordinary people. People who wanted to know what was happening in their city.
He carries every point, who blends the useful with the agreeable, amusing his reader while he instructs him.
With these words and this promise, on August 20th, 1773, began the Baltimore News American, a newspaper that is also an uninterrupted 200-year diary of the average Baltimorean's comic and tragic encounters with fate, nature, and other men.
Great, we were told, was the rejoicing when the news, the scandal, and all the convenience of the paper were brought within easy reach of the good townsfolk.
That very first issue contained an ad describing in great detail, for the benefit of readers, the attractions of newly surveyed land to the west near Fort Pitt in Pennsylvania.
Any person inclinable to settle on these lands may be more fully informed of the terms by applying to the subscriber.
The name at the bottom of the ad, George Washington, Mount Vernon, in Virginia. When the Baltimore News American's first editor, William Goddard, published his Opus 1 on that day in 1773, a minority of the citizenry was committed either to the British crown or to the new radical spirit of revolution and independence. But the average man was often just confused or uncommitted.
October 14th, 1774. One Anthony Stewart, a merchant of Annapolis, became the subject of great controversy when it was discovered that his vessel, Peggy Stewart, arrived with a cargo of that detestable weed, tea.
History has proven that the unfortunate Anthony Stewart knew nothing of his ship's cargo until it landed at Annapolis. But his seeming defiance of the colonial boycott on tea made him a villain in the eyes of many. And there was nothing he could do to prove his innocence except...
He must burn his ship, the whole thing.
Gentlemen, in Boston less than a year ago, it was sufficient that the cargo be dumped into the bay.
He must burn the ship. He must go aboard and set fire to her himself.
Please... My wife is upstairs in a delicate condition. We are expecting our sixth child any moment.
The ship must be burned!
Thus, Anthony Stewart became one of the first economic victims of the Revolutionary War. History was taking place in the streets of Baltimore, but the man in the street wasn't always concerned with history.
October 30th, 1773. A few nights ago, about 12 o'clock, a window of the apartment in which Captain George Buchanan of this town was asleep was opened by one of our nocturnal adventurers, who, putting in his arm, made prize, and expecting further plunder, was preparing to get into the room, which the captain's awaking and advancing towards the window fortunately prevented.
An indignant letter to the editor in that same issue called attention to other problems in the streets.
Sir, I undertake to point out sundry abuses which call for immediate reliefs. Mountains of rubbish, stone, bricks, etc., laying for months together in our streets, to the great hindrance of passengers and carriages. Our market crowded with the tables of gingerbread and apple hawkers, so as often to render it impassable. Blasphemy, drunkenness, and pilfering practiced under our instant notice by vagabonds, who are suffered to lurk about the marketplace day and night, a scene obnoxious to age as it is dangerous to our youth. Whether these nuisances deserve public notice, I submit to you and am, sir, your friend, a fellow inhabitant.
Obviously, the words of an angry Baltimore resident, as also are these.
April 26th, 1775. Public notice.
Elizabeth, wife of the subscriber, having eloped and otherwise misbehaved... This is to warn all persons not to trust her on my account, as I will not pay any debts of her contracting from the date hereof.
And it wasn't exactly a happy time when the first officially authorized copies of the Declaration of Independence, with the names of its signers, were printed by the News American.
The 13 United States of America have declared independency in Congress, July 4th, 1776.
It could have been the publication of a hangman's list, but it didn't turn out that way. And when the peace was won, Baltimoreans settled down to a way of life that, if not luxurious, was at least pleasant and full of surprises. A Frenchman became the first aeronaut of the world by making a manned flight near Paris. Now it was America's turn.
June 24th, 1784. Yesterday, the ingenious Peter Carnes, Esquire, made his curious aerostatic experiments within the limits of this town, in the presence of a numerous and respectable congress of people, who generally appeared delighted with the awful grandeur of a large globe, making repeated voyages into the airy region, which Mr. Carnes' machine actually performed.
Look, it's moving. The balloon's leaving the ground.
The question is, how are they going to get back?
Perhaps the article was the work of still another News American first, Mary Catherine Goddard, the first woman editor, who took over for Brother William before the Revolution and ran the paper on and off until the end of the century. It is certainly not difficult to detect a woman's tender touch in this account of the 1786 Jones Falls flood.
There are few pens in any degree capable of giving a just description of so awful a scene, and which so strikingly evidences the power of that great being who bade the waters flow. On Friday afternoon, this community were deeply affected by the loss of a valuable member of society in the bloom of life, John Boyce, Esquire, attorney at law, who in attempting to cross Jones Falls in his carriage was suddenly and awfully hurled down the rapid current into the ocean of eternity. In the presence of several of his friends, whose endeavors to save him unhappily proved fruitless.
It was not a time during which the average man could be complacent about the prospects of achieving his 70 years. It may have been with this thought in mind that Baltimore City organized its Department of Health in 1793, which was later to earn the distinction of being the oldest continuous municipal health department in the United States, if not the world. But it could do little then to prevent the frequent epidemics that ravaged the city, as yellow fever did in 1794, let alone help the average man with other highly irritating problems.
May 16th, 1799. An advertisement.
Valuable medicines just received. Sovereign ointment for the itch. Warranted an infallible and immediate cure at once.
Sometimes man found distraction from his own problems in the problems of others.
May 20th, 1799. New novels, Santa Maria or the Mysterious Pregnancy, in 3 volumes.
A simple man, the average Baltimorean of the 1790s, was eager to be entertained.
Come see the African lion, which is on view at the sign of the Black Horse, opposite the Center Market.
Even if it meant possible damnation.
January 4th, 1812. Petition to the mayor of Baltimore signed by 279 citizens.
All exhibitions of the theater, circus, and all others of like character are injurious to religion, morality, good order, and life.
That's the way some people thought. But Baltimore was a big city, growing every day, and there was just no way of keeping the average man away from the evils of the Pantheon.
March 19th, 1812. Advertisement.
Sale by auction of entire cargo of ship Roxana, including 75 bags of bird seed, 50 bags of feathers, 8 cases of opium.
Those turn of the 19th century times were also tragic. And one sees in the daily death lists a terribly high proportion of children who might have survived today.
Causes of death during the week ending Monday morning at sunrise were consumption 4, croup 2, fits 2, and one each from convulsions, drowned, dysentery, childbed, old age, sudden death, dropsy, worms, and colic. Total, 11 adults, 6 children. July 2nd, 1812. Public notice.
A married woman with a fresh breast of milk will take a child to suckle.
Life was short, and there were other deaths as a result of the Second War with Great Britain in 1812. Another result was the first printing of the Star-Spangled Banner.
A gentleman had left Baltimore under a flag of truce for the purpose of getting released from the British a friend of his.
At the time, during the siege of Baltimore Harbor, the gentleman's name, Francis Scott Key, was hardly considered worth mentioning.
I could hardly believe it. After a full night of bombardment, Fort McHenry had held. I felt the urge to write, to capture the moment in poetry. Oh, say, can you see, by the dawn's early light.
A scrap of poetry combined with an old drinking song that became the anthem of one of the world's greatest nations, distributed first in handbill form by the News American. Its wars temporarily finished, the new nation and the city turned to making itself a better society. In Baltimore, America's first railroad, the Baltimore and Ohio, was begun on July 4th, 1828. So great was public excitement that nearly the entire city population attended the ceremonies.
A special march called the Carrollton March, written in honor of this occasion, will be played.
And a poem was penned describing the excitement.
Here's a road to be made with a pick and the spade, 'tis to reach to Ohio for the benefit of trade. Here are mountains to be leveled, here are valleys to be filled.
It was a proud time to be a Baltimorean. The city was the center of so much that was important.
The first gas-lighted public street in the country.
The American Farmer, the first agricultural publication in the United States.
The first regular transatlantic steam vessel sailed from Baltimore.
Mount Clair Station, this country's first railroad depot.
And the first American umbrella factory.
And so it was, established in Baltimore in 1828. Most Baltimoreans of 1830 celebrated the fact that man was being brought closer together by faster means of communication. Besides the B&O Railroad, Baltimore was the home of the clipper ships, which were the fastest sailing vessels in the world. But closer contact with other people brought problems, too. One was the spread of the much-feared cholera. Everyone was suspected of being a carrier.
August 20th, 1832. The fear of cholera seems to have deprived some people of their reason and humanity. Recently, Mr. David Ballou, aged 85, was on a journey one night from New York to Cumberland. After leaving the boat, he took a seat on the stagecoach. During this ride, he was taken sick. The stage passengers were alarmed, and attempts were made to leave him at some house, but...
Pardon, ma'am, but this gentleman has taken sick and...
No, not here. Take him away.
No one would receive him for fear of the cholera.
We can't just abandon the old man.
Please. He's not riding in here.
I agree.
In this critical situation, he was denied a seat inside the stage, was taken out, and lashed to the top for the rest of the journey.
Strong medicine. But there was no way of knowing if the old man was ill of ordinary causes or had the dread disease. Fear of cholera produced many interesting theories as to its cause, cure, and prevention.
I say it's from wearing flannel next to the skin.
And I say it's from eating watermelons and cucumbers.
It was not known until much later, of course, that cholera was spread via bacteria in ordinary drinking water. Water was the culprit once again in 1837.
June 15th, 1837. By far the most extensive and destructive calamity with which the city of Baltimore has ever been visited was experienced on Wednesday night. A calamity so unlooked for.
It was the second great Jones Falls flood of the 19th century. Many would die, and the survivors would soon be busy trying to better themselves.
July 28, 1837. State lottery of $75,000 offered.
Missing out on that, the average Baltimorean could seek to improve his mind.
January 1, 1838.
Night school. Number 26 North Gay Street, $3.50 per quarter, with books, lights, and fuels furnished by the teachers without any additional charge.
And it's also said that travel is broadening.
Fare between Baltimore and Harper's Ferry, 50 cents round trip.
Failing all else, one could always jockey for a better position with the Almighty.
January 30th, 1841.
Pew for sale. An eligibly situated pew in the church will be sold at public sale at 1 o'clock p.m. on Wednesday next.
If day-to-day life occasionally seemed a little dull, there was always the unexpected to shake up the Baltimoreans, like the day a steamship blew up right in the harbor.
April 15th, 1842. It is our melancholy duty to record the most fearful and fatal steamboat explosion which has ever taken place on the waters of the Chesapeake. The new and splendid steamship Medora was yesterday rendered a wreck by the explosion of her boiler.
Some persons were blown in the air and fell on shore, in the water, or on the boats lying nearby.
Others were crushed with splintered timbers, scalded with steam, and not having time to escape, were drowned when the boat overturned and sank.
But Baltimoreans still believed in progress. And now, with Baltimore the nation's second largest city, progress was especially delightful, as with the exciting new means of communication which began in Baltimore.
What hath God wrought?
The first message sent by telegraph from one city to another.
May 29th, 1844. When the Spectator sees the operator transmit a message by a wire from Baltimore to Washington and receive an answer back through the same medium, he cannot but be struck with wonder and admiration.
In honor of the occasion, the Independent Blues Band of Baltimore will play a piece especially written, entitled The Telegraph Quickstep.
The tune, dedicated to inventor Samuel F.B. Morse, celebrated the first time news of a presidential convention passed from one city to another within seconds. There was also progress for the sports fan. Baltimore started out to be the scene of the first heavyweight championship title fight in America. The key is started out to be.
February 8th, 1849. Up to a late hour on Tuesday evening, the public houses were crowded with a mass of those active in arrangements for the fight between Tom Heyer and Yankee Sullivan. But yesterday, they were all gone.
For in 1849, Baltimore's police force, officially at least, was against prize fighting. Warned that the police would break up the fight, Heyer and Sullivan left Baltimore for a wooded area on the shores of Kent County. And there, the battle for the first world championship heavyweight title was fought.
With little difficulty, he struck down Sullivan's guard, caught his head under his left arm, and dealt him with his huge right fist a torrent of blows to the face and over the head. Then Heyer released his hold, and Sullivan dropped senseless and bleeding to the earth.
The winner and world champion, Tom Heyer!
Thus the brutal and disgusting exhibition closed.
Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary.
That same year, Edgar Allan Poe died in Baltimore and was buried in the Presbyterian churchyard. The Swedish nightingale, Jenny Lind, came to Baltimore the following year, even before her voice was heard.
What am I bid for the honor of purchasing the first ticket to Miss Lind's opening concert? All right, I have $10. $10, $25, $50, $75, $100. Sold to G.W. Whitehurst, proprietor of the Daguerrean Gallery.
Not only were the concerts fully attended, often with people seated on the stage itself, but all Baltimore loved her.